There are schools of thought that believe we have unlimited scope and possibilities for making decisions. The truth is that our scope is somehow restricted and we have less room. It is therefore key that we engage in innovative decision-making to optimize opportunities in our business and our personal lives. We need to understand our decision-making skills as individuals and organizations. This will enable us to adjust accordingly to the constant changing environment. Question: if Jesus had taught at Harvard Business School on these related issues, what would he have to say? My name is Tinuke Akinbulumu. Welcome to today's episode of the If Jesus Taught at Harvard Business School podcast. Have you found the time to reflect on the following three things? Firstly, the legacy you will leave behind when it's time to depart from this realm called Earth. Secondly, upon your departure, who is scheduled to take over the leadership role of the organization or the family? And thirdly, do you have a succession plan for the leadership development of the potential successors to facilitate the going concern of the organization or the family? When we talk about the going concern, we're referring to the fact that the entity has neither the intention to liquidate or curtail materially the scale of its operations. As a result, it is therefore important that organizations have a succession management plan in place to choose the leader that will take the organization or the family into the next generation. Miles Monroe, in a statement he made before he died, stressed the importance of investment in people over infrastructure, a position echoed by the statement in Procter & Gamble's philosophy. And it reads, "If you leave us our money, our buildings, and our brands, but take away our people, the company will fail. But if you take away our money, our buildings, and our brands, but leave us our people, we can rebuild the whole thing in a decade." Richard Dupree, P&G CEO, 1947. A few points before we define what succession entails. No one is ever ready for leadership. It is about preparation. Moses and Jonah both resisted even though God had selected them for the tasks. It took preparation. Moses in the wilderness and Jonah in the belly of a whale. That is what it took to get them ready for the task ahead. So we can see that being prepared is essential for companies when it comes to preparing leadership to take over for the next phase of an entity. This topic is of relevance nowadays when we consider the lack of role models to prepare the younger generations, which will eventually lead to a lack of leaders to steer the future. In this episode, we shall be exploring the framework required for an effective succession management leadership plan.
Thank you, Tinuke, for the introduction. So what is succession? I've got five definitions here. Number one, the continuance of a corporation's status as a legal person, keyword being continuance. Number two, the act or process by which one corporation assumes ownership of another, keyword assumes ownership. Number three, the act or process by which one state takes over or follows upon another and becomes entitled to its rights and position in international law. Keywords, takes over or follows upon. Number four, the act or process by which a person becomes entitled to the property or property interest of a deceased person. Again, keywords, becomes entitled to. And finally, the transmission of an estate of a descendant to his or her heir. Keyword, transmission. In the brief summary we've just given, We've given five definitions to what succession may necessarily be. But most of this workshop today, we're going to look at factors that facilitate an effective leadership succession or transition plan. Now, the first factor I'm going to delve in is what I've termed as the decision driver, because there has to be a driver that kickstarts the process. Now, this is normally orchestrated by the leader of an organization or by the management board. Now, questions like knowing when it's time. Also, When do we make an announcement to hand over? These are crucial questions that sort of qualify the kind of decisions that you will make around handing over the organization to someone else. The following case studies give us some further insights into what this may be entailed or what it may entail. And this is around Moses when it was time for him to hand over to Joshua. The first point we sort of mentioned earlier is knowing when it's time. And in the case of Moses, we can give this a tick, because when we look at this case study, or when we delve further into this case study, we're told that Moses went out and he spoke these words to the children of Israel. He pointed out the fact that I am now 120 years old and I am no longer able to lead you. Hence, you know, the driver for someone to take over. He goes on to say that the Lord has said to me personally, Moses, that I shall not cross the Jordan, but the Lord will go ahead of me. He will destroy the nations before me and he will take possession of their lands. But on this occasion, Joshua, the successor, will also cross over ahead of you, as the Lord had said. So based on that simple scenario, we can say it was time for Moses to hand over. Now, the second point is that there has to be an announcement to your key stakeholders. And again, we can see in the same passage later on that Moses actually summons his successor, Joshua, and says to him in the presence of all Israel, as I mentioned earlier, these are the key stakeholders, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors to give them, and you must divide it among them as their inheritance. Again, he offers some words of encouragement to his successor and says, the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Do not be terrified because of them. For again, the Lord your God will go ahead of you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. So we've spoken about knowing when it's time, the fact that there needs to be an announcement. And now, most importantly, there has to be purpose. It has to be purpose driven. Why was it time for the Lord to hand over the leadership over the children of Israel from Moses to Joshua? And in Numbers 27, it gives us the strategic intent or the purpose as to why Moses had to be replaced. The Lord said to Moses, go up to this mountain in the Abarim range and see the land that I've given the Israelites. After you have seen it, you too will be gathered to your people as your brother Aaron was. And now this is the reason why. For when the community rebelled at the waters in the desert of Zin, both of you, that is Aaron and Moses, disobeyed my command to honor me as holy before their eyes. And this is the purpose as to why the transition had to go from Moses to Joshua. So you can see, when it comes to decision being a driver to hand over the reins of an organization to someone else, you have to know when it's time. There has to be a formal announcement. And most importantly, it has to be purpose driven as well. Finally, I have two other case studies which reinforce the fact that it has to be purpose driven. Now, the next one has to do between Elijah handing over to Elisha. It tells us that the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind. In other words, God had already decided that Elisha was going to take over. But it tells us that Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. So Elijah says to Elisha, who is to be his successor, stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel. But Elisha said, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. So they went down to Bethel. Now, my take on this actual passage is the fact that Elijah already knew that he was going to hand over. And Elisha probably had been briefed by God that Elijah was going to take over. Hence his stance that he was not going to leave Elijah. Probably wanted to learn some more. Elijah probably wanted to stay so that they could be on the same page. But again, it stresses the importance that you need to know when it's time. There needs to be some form of announcement, and it has to be driven by a purpose, not by a self-centered purpose, but by a godly purpose. And the final case study I'm going to look at around this whole concept of it has to be decision driven is when David was about to hand over to his own successor, being Solomon. Tells us when the time drew near. In other words, it was the time for a handover to take place. When the time drew near for David to die, he gave a charge to his son Solomon. In other words, words of encouragement. "I'm about to go the way of all the earth," he said. "So be strong, act like a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in obedience to him and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and regulations as written in the laws of Moses. Do this so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep his promise to me. If your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all their hearts and soul, you will never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel." So you can even see from this scripture, again, the points that we discussed earlier have all been re-emphasized. The importance of knowing when it's time. David knew it was time for him to die. You know, there needs to be some form of announcement. In this case, David was announcing to his son about the fact that, you know, he's about to go the way of all the earth. And finally, it has to be purpose driven. And you can see from that, you know, from that passage, David telling Solomon the reason why he has to take over, the reason why he has to take over leadership, to lead the people, to make the people behave in a godly manner. So, you know, you see there has to be a timing, announcement, and purpose driven. Component number one when it comes to having an effective transition plan for leadership. The second factor has to do with the assurance of continuity. You know, is the organization going to continue? Is it going to be what I term going concern? Because that's the only reason why you would want somebody to take over from the previous leadership, because you've envisaged that the organization is of a going concern nature. It's not going bankrupt, but it is going to continue for the foreseeable future. So assurance of continuity is another effective factor to ensure that, you know, the transition process is effective. And again, we can see that in the passages that we've just read, in where God is assuring Joshua and Moses that the children of Israel are a going concern entity for the foreseeable future. As he says, "And the Lord will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, whom he destroyed along with their land." So you can see that some nations were destroyed, you know, to facilitate the message that the children of Israel are here to stay. The passage goes on to say that the Lord will deliver them to you, and you must do to them all that I've commanded you. Again, be strong. Again, those are encouraging words to Joshua, and those assuring words to Moses that I'm actually making this transition favorable and as smooth as possible by ensuring that the entity called the children of Israel are of a going concern nature. So he encourages Joshua to be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For, key to the transition process, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. In other words, God has assured them of the continuity of the entity called the children of Israel. Factor number three is actually around choosing the successor. Now, when it comes to the process of succession management, we need to understand that there is a difference between the choice of a potential successor and the actual confirmation of a particular choice. Now, this is the reason why some organizations have what we call a trial or probation period between the choice and the confirmation of an appointee. Now, Jeff Immelt, who took over Jack Welch as the CEO of General Electric, went through a process of being chosen as a potential successor with other candidates to finally being confirmed and appointed by the GE board. Now, a probation or trial period is critical to the succession management process because it provides a platform to ensure that the successor and the predecessor are on the same page regarding the future of the organization. How many times have we seen people taking over the helms of affairs with ulterior motives which are not in line with the future direction of the organization? Kathleen Hogan, the Chief Human Resource Officer of Microsoft, in an article highlighted the following. As potential successors are identified, their leaders should ask whether they are interested in becoming a successor, rather than assuming so and putting them on the list. Hogan mentioned a time when she put successors on a list without speaking to them first, a mistake she didn't make twice. David, as we know, he was chosen and he was anointed by God to be the king of Israel, but his final confirmation and appointment to the throne was years later, as we can see in the passage below. Now the Lord said to Samuel, "How long are you going to mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Now fill your horn with oil and be on your way, because I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king." Remember, there's a difference between choosing and confirming. So at this point in time, we're told that he's chosen one of Jesse's son to be king. But Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears about it, he will kill me." I mean, hence me stressing the point that, you know, God had already made plans for a successor because Saul was still on the throne. And Samuel is expressing his concern that, hey, you know, Saul is still on the throne. How can I go and anoint somebody to become the king? But, you know, you can't constrain God to a box. So let me continue. So the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord." In other words, covering Samuel's back. "Invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one that I indicate." So you can see at this stage that the Lord has chosen the successor. He hasn't confirmed him, but he has chosen him and he sent Samuel to go and anoint him. Now, a similar situation or scenario was also around the choice of Joshua as a successor to Moses, as we can see in the passage below. Moses said to the Lord, "May the Lord, the God who gives breath to all living things, appoint someone," in other words, choose someone over this community, "to go out and to come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in, so the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd." And then this is where the choice of the Lord comes in. "So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is the spirit of leadership, and lay your hand upon him." In other words, this is the person that I have chosen, anoint him. Now, the fourth factor is confirming the appointment. In factor number three, we said choosing the successor, but now we know who the successor is and he has to be confirmed. Because as highlighted earlier, there is a difference in the choice of a successor and the confirmation of a successor. As we can see in the case of Joshua as well, in the passage it tells us that once Joshua was confirmed, it says, "Have him," Joshua, "stand before the priest, Eliezer, and the key stakeholders, the entire assembly, and commission him in their presence. Give him some of your authority so that the whole Israelite community will obey him. He is to stand before Eliezer the priest, who will obtain decisions for him by inquiring of the Urim before the Lord. At his command, he and the entire community of the Israelites will go out, and at his command they will come in. Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua and had him stand before Eliezer the priest and the whole assembly. Then he laid his hands on him and commissioned him, as the Lord instructed through Moses." Now, you can see in that passage, the whole process is around confirming the appointment of a successor. It has been illustrated in this particular passage. You know, we have the predecessor, you know, bringing the successor between the management board, Eliezer, the priest, and the entire assembly, and commissioning him, giving him the power, giving him the authority, also relating to the congregation what his purpose, what his role was as a successor. We can see that in the passage. As part of the confirmation, we can see Moses encouraging Joshua, you know, telling him, speaking to him in the presence of all Israel, you know, encouraging him to be strong, to be courageous, reminding him that he, you know, as the successor, he must go with the people into the land that God swore to their ancestors to give them, that Joshua must divide it amongst them as their inheritance, that, you know, encouraging Joshua, telling him that, you know, no need to be afraid because the Lord himself will go before you. He will be with you. He will never leave you. He will not forsake you. Joshua, don't be afraid. You know, your succession will be smooth because the Lord, your God, will be with you. So don't be discouraged. Now, we see words of similar encouragement when it comes to the case of David as the successor. We see in the passage related to David that, you know, so they sent for him and they had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said, "Rise and anoint him. This is the one." In other words, I am now confirming my appointment. I am now confirming the successor that I chose years before. So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. Now, remember, when we spoke about decision number one, we stressed the importance of an announcement. We stressed the importance of communicating to the key stakeholders. So God was sending a message to David's key stakeholders, his brothers. You know, it says, Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, I love this bit, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went to Ramah. You know, job done. David had been confirmed. Now, in the recent US election, again, we see the important role that the Electoral College plays in the confirmation process of the US president. Now, Trump continued to push the notion that the election was rigged, but he failed to solidify his position because of the robust selection and confirmation process in place as a result of the Electoral College in the United States of America. The Electoral College in the United States of America had rules, had regulations, they had a framework. So as long as the Electoral College approved the selection of Joe Biden, he was confirmed as the 46th president of the United States of America. Factor number five, there needs to be unity between the incumbent and the successor. Now, still on the topic of the recent US election, for the first time in history, we witnessed a scenario where the incumbent president refused to go to the swearing-in ceremony of the incoming president. This is a high indicator of the lack of unity between both parties and sends the wrong message to the people being governed. The ripple effect of this action can still be seen in the United States, as the divide between the Republicans and the Democrats could be seen in the aftermath of the election, with court cases, accusations, executive orders reversing policies that were put in place. Now, the most favorable scenario would be for unity between the incoming and the outgoing, for them to be on the same page. But unfortunately, this was not the case. In the 1970s and the 1980s, we also saw similar scenarios in the spate of military coups at the national and even at board levels where we witnessed hostile takeovers. Now, in these scenarios, it's very, very hard and very, very complicated for the incoming and the outgoing to be on the same page, since the transition was not smooth. The transition was hostile. So tendency for them to be on the same page will literally be zero. Now, we need to take our leaf from the relationship between Moses and Joshua during the transition process. It tells us in the passage that the Lord said to Moses, "Now the day of your death is near. Call Joshua and present yourselves at the tent of meeting, where I will commission him." So Moses and Joshua came and presented themselves at the tent of meeting. So you can see that even God understands the importance of there being unity between the incoming and the outgoing. Then the Lord appeared at the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the cloud stood over the entrance to the tent. And the Lord said to Moses, "You are going to rest with your ancestors, and these people will soon prostitute themselves to the foreign gods of the land they are entering. They will forsake me and break the covenant I made with them. And in that day, I will become very angry with them and forsake them. I will hide my face from them and they will be destroyed. Many disasters and calamities will come on them. And in that day, they will ask, 'Have not these disasters come on us because our God is not with us?' And I will certainly hide my face in that day because of all their wickedness in turning to other gods. Now God says to Moses, Now write down this song and teach it to the Israelites and have them sing it so that it may be a witness for me against them when I have brought them into the land flowing with milk and honey, the land I promised on oath to their ancestors. And when they eat their fill and thrive, they will turn to other gods and worship them, rejecting me and breaking my covenant. And when many disasters and calamities come on them, this song will testify against them because it will not be forgotten by their descendants. I know what they are disposed to do, even before I bring them into the land I promised them on oath. So Moses wrote down this song that day and taught it to the Israelites. Then the Lord, this is where the succession mandate comes in. Then the Lord gave this command to Joshua, son of Nun, after speaking to Joshua and Moses about the characteristics and the character traits of the people that he was going to lead. He gave this command to Joshua, son of Nun. Despite all what I've said, be strong and courageous, for you will bring these Israelites into the land I promised them on oath, and I myself will be with you. So you can see that there was unity between Moses. There was unity between Moses and Joshua. You know, even when God was relating the future plans of the entity called the children of Israel, he related it to both of them so that in the transition period and in the handover period, they were both on the same page regarding the going concern for the children of Israel. Factor number six, the communication strategy to the key stakeholders. Now, this is a key factor, and it really makes you appreciate the importance of the communication of the results of an election, obviously free and fair ones, and also the swearing-in ceremonies of leaders once they take office. It is a way of communicating to the populace that the individual has been appointed and confirmed to take over the new leadership role after going through all the required protocols required. It is therefore key that once the confirmation and appointment have been carried out, this needs to be effectively communicated to all the key stakeholders. Now, in the case of Joshua, the following strategy was implemented. I think it was actually a three-pronged strategy. First of all, there was communication to Joshua. There was the communication to the priest. And then there was the communication to the Israelites. Because we see in the passage, if I give a summary of the passage that covers these three factors or these three strategies, it says, now write this song and teach it to the Israelites and have them sing it so that it may be a witness for me against them. When I have brought them into the land flowing with milk and honey, the land I promised on oath to their ancestors, and when they eat their fill and thrive, they will turn to other gods and worship them, rejecting me and breaking my covenant. And when many disasters and calamities come on them, this song will testify against them because it will not be forgotten by their descendants. Now, that's key. It will not be forgotten by their descendants because, again, God is assuring Joshua, who was to be the successor of Moses, that as far as God is concerned, the children of Israel are a going concern entity. You know, they will go on as an entity. So Moses wrote down this song on the day, and he taught it to the Israelites. The Lord then gave this command to Joshua, son of Nun, who is the successor to these people. Be strong and courageous, for you will bring the Israelites into the land I promised them on oath, and I myself will be with you. So we can see here the communication to Joshua about his new role. Then we spoke about communication to the priest. Again, the passage highlights the importance of this communication strategy because it tells us that after Moses finished writing it in a book, the words of this law from beginning to the end, he gave this command to the Levites, who were very important stakeholders as well, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He said to them, take this book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God. There it will remain as a witness against you. For, again, coming to the third set of stakeholders, being the children of Israel. Because Moses now says, for I know how rebellious and stiff-necked you are. If you had been rebellious against the Lord while I am still alive and with you, how much more will you rebel after I die? Assemble before me all the elders of your tribes and all your officials so that I can speak these words in their hearing and call the heavens and earth to testify against them. For I know that after my death, you are sure to become utterly corrupt and to turn from the way I have commanded you. In days to come, disaster will fall on you because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord and arouse his anger by what your hands have made. And Moses recited the words of this song from beginning to the end in the hearing of the whole assembly of Israel. So you can see that the communication strategy is key. The communication is about communicating the purpose, communicating to Joshua the as is situation, communicating to Joshua the to be situation, communicating to the priest who are like some form of management about the going concern, communicating to the Israelites about their current condition, about the fact that even when he was alive, they disobeyed, that when he's dead, they would disobey. But he left them with a reminder of how it's supposed to be. And also in communicating to them, Joshua was there, Joshua the successor. Now, what is the key objective of having an effective communication strategy? And ensuring that everyone is on the same page. It's because it makes the transition process smooth and effective. That is the key reason why whatever communication strategy you adopt when you are moving your leadership from one person to another, the key phrase or the key word is unity amongst all the key stakeholders involved in the transition process. Factor number 7, a smooth transition. In other words, creating a favorable environment. Now, one of the strategies employed by companies that are the subject of an hostile takeover is called the poison pill. The objective of this strategy is to make the company worthless and not beneficial by increasing the debt burden to the acquirer. In other words, not making it favorable. When it comes to succession, the more favorable the environment of the company is to the incoming leader, this facilitates a smooth transition. We can see from the recent US transition from Trump to Biden how difficult the Trump administration made it for Joe Biden's administration. Tactics like blocking access to required finances and intelligence reports were some of the actions imposed by the Trump administration. The importance of setting up the right environment for your successor is also confirmed by Jim Collins in his book Good to Great, where he points out that level 5 leaders set up their successors for even greater success in the next generation. Now, as a father, I also believe that we should set up the right scene, scenario, or environment for our children to succeed in life. For example, in finances, providing accommodation, helping them in areas that they need from a foundational point of view. In other words, it's important that we give them the right start in life. Now, when Joshua took over the leadership, Moses, in his capacity, provided the right settings in terms of his accomplishments. He had led the children of Israel out of Egypt. He also blessed all the tribes before he died. I mean, later on in the passage, we see where Moses actually exhorts Joshua in the presence of the people that he was going to lead. It tells us that on a particular day, the Lord exhorted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. And they stood in awe of him all the days of his life, just as they had stood in awe of Moses. Now, this next passage I quite like because it reminds me of the film Godfather when the Godfather was about to die and he calls Michael Corleone and begins to narrate who his enemies were and what he needed to do. This passage is similar. Now this is David speaking to his son Solomon, as Solomon is supposed to be his successor. And he says, Now you yourself know what Joab, son of Zeruiah, did to me, what he did to the two commanders of the Israel's army, Abnon, son of Ner, and Amasa, son of Jetter. He killed them, shedding their blood in peacetime as if in battle. And with that blood, he stained the belt around his waist and the sandals on his feet. And now this is David giving his son, giving Solomon some advice as his successor. Deal with him according to your wisdom, but do not let his gray head go down to the grave in peace. But show kindness to the son of Barzillai of Gilead, and let them be among those who eat at your table. They stood by me when I fled from your brother Absalom. And remember, you have with you Shema, son of Gera, the Benjamite, from Bahurim, who called down bitter curses on me the day I went to Mahanaim. When he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, I will not put you to death by the sword, but now do not consider him innocent. You are a man of wisdom. You will know what to do to him. Bring his gray head down to the grave in blood. Then David after advising Solomon, after making the environment favorable by advising him on what he should do and what he should not do, David rested with his ancestors and was buried in the city of David. He had reigned 40 years over Israel, 7 years in Hebron and 33 in Jerusalem. So Solomon sat on the throne of his father, and his rule, I quite like this last statement, because it's, you know, it helps us to understand the importance of, you know, making and creating a favorable environment for your successor. The passage ends by saying, so Solomon sat on the throne of his father, David, and his rule was firmly established. Talk about making the environment favorable for your successor. And as I said earlier, we also saw something similar when Don Corleone was speaking to Michael Corleone and advising him that he too was about to go, and he was handing over the reign of the Corleone family to Michael. Factor number 8, credentials, skills and expertise. Now, this is a key component that should not be taken lightly when you consider the future steering of your organization. Now, when you assess the credentials of Joshua, we can see that he was already of leadership material when you consider the following. Number one, he was Moses' assistant and personal aide for 40 years. He was chosen, confirmed, and appointed by God. He was an eyewitness. In other words, he had experience to the plagues and the exodus from Egypt. He was present in Egypt, and he was present when they exited from Egypt. He was confident and he was bold. And the most important one is that he had the Spirit of God. Now, the firm General Electric also had certain criteria that they applied when it came to selecting the successor to the Chief Executive Officer position. Number one, someone young enough to last for the next 10 years. You know, earlier I spoke about the importance of the assurance of continuity, you know, going concern. Number two, someone who can handle change, I guess just like Joshua, who witnessed the changes that took place from Egypt to the Promised Land. Also, the candidates were products of the strong values and reward structure of General Electric. And finally, GE, General Electric, required someone who will continue, again, there goes that going concern, who will continue their strong traditions and values. Choosing a chief executive officer from within a company is a positive, as confirmed by Jim Collins in his book called Good to Great. He highlighted the fact that 10 out of 11 great CEOs came from within a company. Now, in the two passages below as well, in two passages that I'm going to try and give a summary of, we can also see the importance of credentials, having the right skills and having the right expertise. Now, this is Moses speaking to the Lord when it came to the choosing of a successor. Moses said to the Lord, "May the Lord, the God who gives breath to all living things, appoint someone over this community to go out and come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in, so the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd." So the Lord said to Moses, "Listen, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is the spirit of leadership, and lay your hands upon him." So you can see again, the stressing of the importance of having the right credentials, having the right skills, and having the right expertise. Also, when it came to choosing David as well, it says when they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel, "I don't select people based on your credentials or your definition of expertise." And the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at." People look at the outward experience, and then the Lord tells him how he chooses people. But the Lord looks at the heart. Now, the final factor is assessing the suitability of the candidate through test and exposure. Now, apart from what we discussed in the earlier factor, we spoke about skills and expertise, we also need to determine if the candidate is suitable by giving them certain tests and also exposing them to different scenarios. Now, in the case of Joshua, Joshua was exposed to potential danger, but he always passed with flying colors, because we all know he was one of the two spies that came back from Canaan with a positive report. Now, when it comes to General Electrics, they also had tests and exposures that the candidates were subjected to. For example, the candidates that were on the shortlist, they were monitored as hawks. They were all given responsibilities for different departments over a time period. Some even handled up to 17 separate jobs. They were appointed to the General Electric Board to assess their relationship with other exposures to other board members. They were invited to events that involved family to assess their character at home. Now, in this passage as well, in the case study passages, we can see something similar as well, because it tells us that in Numbers, it says, immediately Moses and Aaron bowed with their faces touching the ground in front of the whole community of Israel as they assembled. At the same time, two of them who had explored the land, Joshua and Caleb, also tore their clothes in despair. But listen to the difference, how they handled the situation, because they were supposed to go and spy out the promised land. 10 of them came back with a negative report, but Joshua and Caleb came back with a positive report. So from that testing point of view, again, they passed with flying colors. Listen to what they said. They said to the whole community of Israel, the land we explored is very good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us into the land and give it to us. This is a land flowing with milk and honey. Don't rebel against the Lord, and don't be afraid of the people of the land. We will devour them like bread. They have no protection, and the Lord is with us. So don't be afraid of them. So that test that they did by going to spy out the land, it assessed their boldness, it assessed their integrity, it assessed whether they would come back with a negative or positive report. It also assessed whether they were the right material to lead the people in managing the stakeholders. How do you deliver your report to the key stakeholders? So we can see from that passage how Joshua and Caleb passed with flying colors. In another passage, it tells us, and this is all about war, and about how bold Joshua was. It says the Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. Now, as long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. Now, when Moses' hand grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this on the scroll as something to be remembered, and make sure that Joshua hears it. I think the Lord had already made up his mind at this point, because I will completely blot out the name of the Amalekites from under heaven. And finally, further on in the passage, again, we can see the exposure that Joshua is subjected to. It tells us that then Moses set out with Joshua, his aide, and Moses went up on the mountain of God. He said to the elders, wait here for us until we come back to you. Aaron and Hur are with you, and anyone involved in a dispute can go to them. So you can see the level of exposure that Joshua had, the level of testing that Joshua had. So when it comes to assessing the suitability of Joshua as a successor to Moses, we can see that everything that he needed was already there. So I've just concluded with factor number 9, but I'm sure you will all agree that these 9 factors are very, very important, because there's one key element as to why this process has to be efficient, why this process has to be robust, why this process has to ensure that the right candidate is selected to lead an organization or to lead a family into the next phase of their life, is because of the going concern principle. You know, if an organization is to continue, if an organization or family is to continue, they need to select someone who can lead the organization effectively. And for that person to be able to lead the family or lead the organization or even lead the church effectively, he has to be able to pass with flying colors. These 9 factors have to be taken into consideration so that the company does not go on a downfall, but the company goes on the company goes upwards. I mean, there's so many case studies where leaders have taken over organizations and these organizations have crashed because the leader didn't have the right skills. Now, I mentioned earlier about case studies. We've seen numerous examples in Africa where leaders impose and they force themselves upon organizations. They take over countries, you know, with total hostility, and they're not prepared to lead a country or lead an organization into the next phase of that entity's life. So by having a framework in place, by looking at these 9 factors that we've spoken about, at least I believe a company, a family, or even an organization are on the right track to selecting the right leader. Thank you.
We end this episode with some take-home points from the discussion around succession management. 1, the decision to hand over to a successor should be purpose-driven. 2, the timing for the handover should be planned in advance, and this should be accompanied by a clear announcement to the organization. 3, the handover should support the continuity or going concern of the organization. 4, there is a difference between choosing the potential successor and confirming the appointment. This is because a trial or probation period is encouraged to ensure the right candidate is selected. 5, it is important that there is mutual understanding and unity between the incumbent and current leader. 6, an effective communication strategy that informs the organization of important updates during the transition period up to the confirmation of the successor is necessary. 7, the incumbent leader should create a favorable environment for the successor to take over. 8, the skills and credentials of the successor should complement the vision and support the future path and direction of the organization. 9, the succession management program should be designed to test and expose the potential successor to the type of challenges internally and externally that the organization is likely to face in the future. My name is Tinuke Akinbuemo. Goodbye and God bless.